taking my Zyrtec, so that's all I can do. So, come to order. Bill's on third reading, final passage. Senate File 97, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 97, sponsored by Senator Cole, appropriations to the Wyoming Business Council and act relating to economic development, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. Reading clerk will read in amendment number one, third reading amendment number one to Senate File 97.
Senate File 97, third reading amendment number one, in the Nicholas second reading amendment, amend as follows.
Senator Coe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 97. Members of the Senate, as you look at the amendment on page 5, line 5, we changed the word proportionally to significantly, and this has to do with the assessed valuation. If you remember the discussion we had yesterday, if you look at how industrial properties are assessed at 11.5% for this particular $24 million project, if you did it proportionally, you'd have to be investing between $250,000 and $300,000, the way I figure it at 11.5%. So I changed that word to significantly. We also go back in on page 6, line 18, and add two buildings, we add equipment. A lot of these companies that might be coming will bring millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment with them. Page 7, line 2, we delete offer and change that word to provide. That just, to me, was a better word for that particular section. Borrower shall provide security to repay the loan with a residual value sufficient to repay the loan in event of default. So we change offer to provide. Page 7, line 10, we enter after secure the word either, so that paragraph would read differently going on into page 7, line 13. So the way that paragraph would read, this has to do with a first security position on the project. With that, it would read, the state treasurer shall secure either a first security interest on the entire project funded in part with loan proceeds issued under this section, including infrastructure, buildings, and equipment, financed with other funds, or other substitute security, which will protect repayment to the state on an equal basis with the prime lender. So with that, Mr. President, we kind of put both of these potential people on the same playing field when it comes to security. Try to answer questions on the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? You ready for the question? All those in favor of third reading amendment number one at Senate File 97, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. We have another amendment. Amendment number two. Reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 97, third reading amendment number two in the Nicholson second reading amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number two to Senate File 97. Folks, what we've done here is gone back and looked at subparagraph C on page 3 of the amendment and really set out more closely what we think this process will look like. So we have the Romanet 1 and 2 are the what I describe as the gatekeeper functions. So the first gatekeeper is the governor himself to say, look, go ahead and enter, go down this process. But he suggests in the beginning size and parameters of the loan. So if you have $25 million there and he thinks that it's only the project should only command 15, he says, go there, but really I think you should only get 15 and you ought to have jobs of 500 jobs or whatever his recommendations are. Then the next gatekeeper is the treasurer. You go to the treasurer says, His preliminary recommendations are that there be a first lien on buildings A, B, C, and D. And those recommendations are forwarded on to the Business Council. Then we go to the Business Council for their review. The next process is they make your recommendations. They move forward to the SLIV board. And the final activity returns to the governor, assuming that there's approval of the processes below. But they go to the governor, and the governor at that time can follow the recommendation of the Business Council. Treasurer still has final approval as the structure of the loan and the loan guarantee. So in the end of the day, the treasurer and the governor are the ones that have to vouch for the legality of the loan, so they have it there. So we have a gatekeeper function. We go through the typical BRC program, and then the governor and the treasurer have the final say.
Is there any discussion? Vice President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just a question of the sponsor, and I know that we've looked at in the Business Council where we've interjected the fact that before a project through BRC and also on large projects, even data systems as far as that goes, before it actually gets to the council, that they've done the review for the constitutionality and have an opinion from their AG. Where does that fit into this? I know it's in there. I just want to be sure that, you know, before we get this thing too far along, that what they're proposing has had the review by legal staff to show that clearly it follows all of the requirements of our statutes and constitution.
Just a moment. Any other further discussion before the sponsor takes a second time? Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a question for the sponsor. I want to make sure that under 5, where it goes back to the governor, that if in the process where he said go ahead and it went to the treasurer, then it went to the business council, and then it came to SLIB, and he happened to be a no vote. So is 5 just that he's supposed to final approval determined upon the loan basis only, or if he didn't, some reason didn't like it and ended up being a no vote, would he then be a no vote? Or he could veto the whole project just because he was no vote?
Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second time. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Mr. President, with respect to the first question about the Attorney General reviewing it in advance, I don't think we actually focused on that. The Act requires that the Attorney General look at it before the final step 5. And I suppose if we had time, we could go back and review it. But for practical purposes, in this instance, since it's going to the gatekeepers, the governor and the treasurer first, I'm less worried about that because the governor is going to consult with his counsel right then and there. So, we could have added in that extra element. It's not there. But I wasn't as concerned because it began there. With respect to the... And that's at page 7, line 22, is the requirement for the opinion. But that's in the final stage. But where the governor is the initial gatekeeper, I frankly was less worried about it than in the other processes where the first time the governor gets to look at it is after it's had a whole series of approvals. So I think we've adequately addressed that. With respect to the final requirement of the governor, though, you have his final approval following determination the loan has met the requirements of this act. I think there is a little bit of an ambiguity there. I think if he was a no vote and he determines that it's illegal, fair enough, he should not sign it. But if he determines that it went through the process and he was just and it was approved by the SLIB, but it met the qualifications of the Act or went through the procedures of the Act, and the AG says it's a legal obligation, I think he ought to prove it even over his signature. But we do give the Treasurer a little more discretion because he is at that point, hopefully he's not left with a lot of terms and conditions for the loan guarantee, or the security, but if the security gets, if at the end of the day he sees something that he thinks is, that makes it not creditworthy, he can pull the plug. So that's why we have them in the front and the end, but his is more of a, is it a creditworthy loan, at least with respect to the principal.
Question is, shall second or third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 97 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. We have another amendment, third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 97. The reading clerk will read it.
Senate File 97, third reading amendment number 3, and the Nicholas second reading amendment amend as follows.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 97. This addresses page 5, lines 17 through 19. What we had was language with respect to what constitutes private investment and conferring with the executive branch and the sponsors of the bill. We thought we could do a better job of writing this act or this provision, so we make it clear that it's private investment in the county or counties in buildings, equipment, and direct project infrastructure of not less than 3 times. So what we do is make sure this private investment, so that could include loans and things outside of there. It could, with respect to buildings and equipment, we've opened it up to be include the word equipment. We talk about direct project infrastructure and the 3 times, but the biggest changes are putting in equipment and putting in the term private investment, which would include things like other loans and other people's resources they're bringing to it other than those of the applicant.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a question on this, and the concern I have is making this change, and you say a private investment and you now include equipment. And certainly you can have a situation, and the question is, are you talking about the dollar amount of the value of the equipment when it goes into it? A thing to be sure and remember about this, if you have specialized equipment in a facility in Cody, or it could be another facility in some other place where it doesn't work and you have this equipment that was designed specifically for that type of business, it's worth a nickel on the dollar if you get into trouble. So you have a situation if the equipment and the way the buildings are configured that this 3 times really is not valid. And I can share that with you about a situation in Fremont County relative to a particular industry that went in there, and the equipment was put in for developing mushrooms, actually, and it didn't work, and then the value was substantially less, and so the collateral was nowhere near what was required.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes his second time. Hearing none. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, a great discussion, and we need to recognize we've got 2 things going on here at the same time. One is, does this project represent an appropriate grant or loan to a business entity? And that's where the 3 times, we're trying to figure out how much, let's talk about interest forgiveness, how much interest should you forget to recruit these folks? That is an issue of whether or not how much economic benefit we send on and whether we approve the project. That is unrelated to the exercise that the treasurer does in loan security. So if you begin to look at this, this goes back and look at this is part sub E under Roman numeral I. So based upon the findings, the party, the council can provide the following minimum public benefits, which is the 3 times. So let's take that issue where you have specialized manufacturing equipment that if the loan defaults has no resale value. You could consider that in doing the 3 times analysis in terms of whether it's a public benefit because ultimately that hits your tax base, et cetera. Now, that is whether it has public benefit is different than the analysis that the treasurer does. The treasurer has a separate analysis under separate sections to say you need to get a security with at least enough to get our principal back. So under that case, if they might have to give a first lien on all the real estate, even though the cash investment from private folks comes in for the benefit or may go actually into equipment. So let me see if I can summarize it easily. We have one analysis with respect to, does it provide sufficient public benefit to give a loan? And what we're saying is make sure the private investment is at least three times the value of what we put in. So if we put in $25 million, we want to see them put in $75 million. Now, when the treasurer goes to prepare a promissory note with security for the repayment of $25 million, this is not relevant. At that point, he has to look at the quality of the security. And if that manufacturing equipment has no residual value, he should be looking for some other collateral, which may be the buildings or other assets. Make sense? I hope.
Question is, or Senator Bebaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. It does make sense on the three times the value based on the public good. And I guess when we add buildings in this arena as well and refer to it in the previous amendment, that's where the security issue becomes a valid concern. And we've already passed the other amendment, but I think the discussion is clearly this is three times the public good, not the security side.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 97 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. Amendment number 4, reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 97, third reading amendment number 4. In the Nicholas second reading amendment, amend as follows.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I move third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 97. Folks, the executive branch as well as the sponsors had concern with the language at line 16 through 28 on page 6, and that's where we talked about whether or not what constitutes new investment and new infrastructure. So listening to those comments, we've redrafted that language to simply provide that we've narrowed it and said the loan guarantee shall be used for direct investment in the project and shall not be used or made available to refinancing pre-existing debt. So we're trying to open up that language a little bit. At the same time, make sure that our purpose here is to recruit new money, new projects, new jobs, and not simply to refinance, but making sure we don't tie ourselves so difficult or so tight that we're not restricting the normal development of projects, because in many instances you are going to have some project upfront investment and that may become part of the project. So I think we've opened it up to try to address that issue.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of third reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 97 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. Amendment number 5, the reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 97, third reading amendment number 5, in the Nicholas second reading amendment, amend as follows.
Senator Schiffer.
President, I'd move third reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 97. Mr. President, what this does, it goes in on page 5, line 2, where it used to specify, or it specifies 100 jobs, and we change that to a significant expansion of permanent jobs in the county or counties. And my thinking there is that there's no magic in 100 jobs. It's going to depend on what the pay level of those jobs are. If they're highly skilled, highly paid jobs, they're obviously more desirable to your community. You may only get 50 of them. But to pin it down to exactly 100, that doesn't seem to make sense in terms of what we're trying to cultivate with this bill. And also I added the words in the county or counties that we really don't want to use this money to create jobs over in Montana or one of our neighbor states. It's for here. We go on to page 5 on line 3, we delete that, the older language. Then on page 8, we come back in, and that's where we lay down the criteria in terms of the loan origination fees and the expenses involved with making sure that these loans are good loans. And we change the wording so that it will read, if experts are retained by the state treasurer under paragraph D9 And that's where he can bring in consultants to look at the creditworthiness of this section, payments to experts retained under this section that exceed the loan origination fee shall be made by the business council. This is to ensure that your treasurer has the ability to come in and look, for example, at these specialized firms and say, is this a creditworthy note? And then we add, the state treasurer shall promulgate necessary rules and regulations. That's the standard. My thought there is we want these people that are going to come in under this program to be able to read the rules and say, all right, here's what the playing field looks like. So they know exactly what they've got to do. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions.
Any discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor of third reamendment number 5 to Senate File 97, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment's been adopted. We're now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion regarding Senate File 97? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, first, my compliments to all the members of the Senate that have worked on this. I think you've gotten a much better framework than we have had for how to go about one of these large project loans. But, Mr. President, I'm going to vote no on the bill, and I rise just briefly to explain why. It's been my theory that in economic development, we have the most success if we set the proper climate and the proper infrastructure. You know, avoid unnecessary governmental regulation. Have a well-educated workforce, have good tax system, fair tax system, low tax system, have a good transportation system, whether they need air, highway, or rail, have a good system of education for the key that will appeal to the key personnel you need to make a new company go, they'll want to see proper opportunities for their children in the K-12 system and in our higher education system. I think those are the things we have to get right to have economic development that's a diversification away from our minerals that depends so much on where the minerals actually are. But I've been nervous about our attempts compete with other states to buy new businesses to come in, particularly large ones, Mr. President. When you have one that seems to be geared to maybe a particular opportunity, I think it's always fair to say, why aren't they being just funded commercially? What is there? What is there there that makes them want to come to the legislature? Where you have one that's just being enticed by the benefits we're offering, I think a lot of times those people are for sale to the highest bidders where they locate their facilities, and they may be here now, and something goes a little wrong, somebody makes them a better offer, they may be down the road, and we don't get the return on our investment that we think we ought to. So for those reasons, Mr. President, I'm not urging anybody else to do the same, but for those reasons, I'm going to be a no on the bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and for the bill. Folks, I share all the same reservations just described by our colleague from Casper. And the opportunity that was first brought to us, whether it is realized or not in Cody, is a chance to sit down and reflect with respect to how are we going to address the needs of our communities, where consistently, I think every time we go out for polling, the number one issues for our constituents are jobs and education. Probably not in that order, probably education first, but then jobs for our young adults, children, once they graduate from high school and from college. And the best education in the world is ain't that great if your kids are all moving away because they can't find jobs. And so we do have to take a look at what it is that our our voters, our constituents want us to do. And we have had great concern, I think at least I've had concerns, and I think many of you shared them, that the Business Ready Community Program has really launched far away from where we began funding infrastructure. But the voters of the state of Wyoming passed by two-thirds vote a constitutional amendment, which is Article 16, Section 12, allowing us by two-thirds vote of this floor to put, and both the other side, to put the money into an economic development fund not to exceed 1% times the assessed valuation. That'd be about $280 million. And that was to provide a revolving investment fund to be used to promote and aid the economic development of the state. And when that was voted on, folks were saying, look, we do want to enter this game, this effort to recruit businesses. And whether this is the right one or not, I don't know that we can judge from here, but we can set in a process which this bill lines out to ensure that if it goes through these hurdles, it probably deserves to be funded out of an economic development fund that we have directed a modest amount of our resources to go into. So I urge your support of it. I do remind you, it's a serious vote. The Constitution requires that this vote be adopted by a two-thirds majority, and that's because there is an appropriation directing that a portion of the SIPA funds that we've set aside for this purpose be actually transferred from a holding account into this investment fund. So give it your great consideration, but understand this is a two-thirds vote, and it requires all of our, or a supermajority of our effort to do it if we want to move down this pathway.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, would urge the body to vote aye on this. And procedurally, when this bill first came to us, it really was what happened was not the proper way to do it. And clearly, with this bill now and the language in there, it's set up the way it was always intended. You know, they went out to the citizens of Wyoming, and by a majority, they voted to put Amendment 4 in there, and now a two-thirds vote by this body. The critical part to this is a security to the state. And I will share with you, in the past, we've had some loans a long time ago that we didn't do it right. We didn't have the proper security, and it was not money well spent. The sideboards are here to protect the state. It's up to the state treasurer and the governor to be sure that we have the proper security. Rest assured that there's no guarantee this deal will work if it ever gets to that point. And more than anything, we have to have the proper security to protect our funds. I think this does that. It's a correct mechanism. I would ask the body to vote aye.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, first of all, thanks to the body for a tremendous debate on what I think is a wonderful project, not just because it's in my community, but because it's in Wyoming. And I can tell you, flat out, other states out there are doing other things that we can't even think about touching. Just can't even think about it. I can tell you I think it's the state of Minnesota has a program that just practically moves companies there. But what I want to say is that this is a win-win situation for the state of Wyoming. It's a win-win situation for my community. No question about it, Bighorn Basin. This parent company is a company that is not going to go out and chase a better deal. They aren't going to do that. They trade on the New York Stock Exchange. Symbol LEI. Stock trades about $45 a share today. They made $170 million last year. To trade on the New York Stock Exchange, you have to have $500 million in net capital to even trade on. So this is a good project. I appreciate all of the work that's gone into with my colleagues, particularly from Albany County, KC, Campbell County. We worked long and hard to bring a bill to you in its final form today that I think is the right way to do it. And without the support of my colleagues, I couldn't have put it together. So urge that you support this. I think it's a win-win for the state and my community. Urge that you vote aye.
Senator Von Flatard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to confess to the body that I voted against the introduction of this, but I think it's been cleaned up in a way that is a good bill. So I ask you to vote aye.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm a no vote. Mr. President, I don't think that really government has much business trying to do this type of activity. And I do know that the people of Wyoming approved by majority vote, or the people voting in the congressional election, the proposal. I think the majority Florida leader misspoke when he said they approved it by two-thirds. They only approved it by a majority. Mr. President, this bill came to us as special interest legislation that violated several tenets of our Constitution. It was rewritten on this floor in a very skillful manner, but not in a manner that allowed it to go through the committees and let the people of Wyoming put their input into this bill. You know, it's much like the occasions that happen on our budget, where major pieces of legislation occur on this floor without the work of the interim, the committees, and involving other people. That's what happened here, Mr. President. It's fair game, of course. This is a major, major issue. And, you know, our history, everybody says, well, you know, we did this a lot of years ago. We had loans, and it didn't work out very well, but by golly, this has got the sideboards on it. This is going to work out. Everything's going to be fine. You don't think that years ago when they came up with all these loans and did it, that they didn't think that they had the sideboards on it? They didn't think it was going to work out? They spent a lot more time than we did because we wrote this thing in one day. I'm opposed.
Further discussion? Question's been called. Chief Clerk will call the roll. It requires a two-thirds majority vote.
Anderson, District 28. Barnard. Bebout. Burns. Case. Christensen. Coe. Cooper. Aye. Kraft. Aye. Dockstader. Aye. Driscoll. Aye. Amrick. Escobel. Geis. Aye. Hastert. Aye. Hicks. Aye. Hines. Aye. Johnson. Aye. Landon. Aye. Meyer. No. Nicholas. Aye. Nutting. Aye. Perkins. Aye. Peterson. Aye. Rothfuss. Aye. Schiffer. Aye. Scott. No. Von Flatern. President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 26 ayes, 4 noes.
Senate File 97, having received the affirmative vote of two-thirds of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 97 has passed the Senate. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 106. The reading clerk will read it. Third reading.
Senate File 106, sponsored by the Management Council, State Education Administration, an act relating to public education, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. Reading clerk will read. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 106.
Senate File 106, third reading amendment number 1, page 4, line 15.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 106 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this amendment goes in on page 4, lines 15 through 19. And, folks, I'm going to read what's on 15 through 19 that I'm hoping we can modify, which essentially doesn't prohibit the super committee from doing too much different from what they are in this bill, but I think allows the proper form for it to occur. First of all, Mr. President, what it says on page 4, 15 through 19 is that recommendations shall include retrofitting those recommendations on the statewide educational accountability as developed and reported by the Select Committee on Statewide Education Accountability following completion of its 2013 interim study. Well, Mr. President, this is the first time that I can recall that we're going to adopt an interim study from any committee without going through the legislative process. Now, we've had a lot of interim committee bills that came through. Some of them passed. Practically, there's a lot of them that were amended, Mr. President, after good debate in the committee process and on the floor. But we're bypassing all of that and going directly to recommending the work of an interim committee. Now, I'm sure that all the interim committees would love to be part of essentially a omnibus bill that wouldn't have the scrutiny of a standing committee and the floor before it was adopted into another piece of legislation. My fear is that this particular part of the legislation would just get lost in the shuffle. So, Mr. President, what I would hope that we could support is some new language. I would essentially delete this language and say that they could address current statutory accountability and assessment responsibilities. So, Mr. President, I think it's prudent for the committee to address accessibility, assessment, and accountability. However, I think it should be those statutory provisions that we already have. And if on the floor or during a committee in a special session we want to amend those and have that discussion and that debate as to provisions that are in the interim recommendations, it would be certainly appropriate to do at that time. But I don't think that you put it in the bill and let it get lost in the bill without that debate specifically. So, Mr. President, I think this is from my perspective, a friendly amendment. We deal with what's on the books right now. And if we want to amend it when we get down here, then we bring those amendments to it and we have that discussion. I hope for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Coe?
Mr. President, I'd urge that you don't support this amendment. Early in the session, the Select Committee on Accountability worked in the interim. No question about that. We did a lot of work, had a lot of meetings. With the fallout, to be honest with you, just to be as straightforward as I can, with the fallout from the Supreme Court decision, we made the decision to put accountability back until we can unravel what's going on. Now, that decision was made by the Chairman of House Education and myself. It seemed appropriate to do that. We did a lot of work in the interim. Those on the committee know we did that. But to put it off, when we have an opportunity coming up, to put it off till next January doesn't make any sense either. So I think this is a bad amendment, awful amendment, to be honest with you, and ask that you defeat it.
Any further discussion? All the, Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, I'm having a little difficulty understanding what's so bad about it, because as I read the language with the proposed amendment, it will mean recommendations shall address current statutory accountability and assessment responsibilities. And that seems to me to give the committee instructions to go address those without telling them exactly how to do it. And that strikes me as appropriate. Mr. President, what am I missing here? I can't see where that's going to do any harm.
Further discussion? Question, Senator Meyer, for your second.
Thank you, Mr. President. Briefly, you know, I think it may be in order if during this time period, if the good chairman from Cody, the northern part of the state, you know, wants to bring a separate piece of legislation during this time period, you know, I think the Rules Committee could rule that in order. But to make it part of the omnibus bill, I think is inappropriate. And I think the good senator from Natrona County hit it right on the mark.
Questions been called. Okay. Ayes and nays have been called for. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard. Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
No.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross,
no.
Closing vote, closing, vote closed, 23 ayes, 7 noes.
Amendment number 1 to Senate File 106 is passed. We are on Amendment number 2. The reading clerk will read in the amendment.
Senate File 106, third reading amendment number 2, page 4, line 15.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. President, now that I'm riding the wave here, Mr. President, I move second reading amendment 106, Senate File.
I hope you have a surfboard lead.
Mr. President, I'll move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 106. Third reading amendment. Thank you. Stand corrected. Mr. President, I would wish that everybody call attention to what I pass out to everybody here. And this is really the heart and soul of what the Supreme Court order was. And I'm going to read a little bit from this Supreme Court order, and it basically says the basis on which the decision was made. And I think that'll go into why I bring this amendment, Mr. President, and it should be self-evident. We really start on paragraph 35. It says the constitutional issue in this case, then, as appropriately framed, is whether, under the Act, the superintendent retains the constitutional power of general supervision of public schools as set forth in Article 7, Section 7 of the Wyoming Constitution. To resolve that issue, we must determine the meaning of the phrase general supervision as used in Article 7, Section 14. Again, we look first to the plain and unambiguous language to determine the intent. If the language is plain and unambiguous, there is no need for construction. And we presume the framers intended what was plainly expressed. Paragraph 36, when determining the meaning of the constitutional language, we must attempt to understand the meaning of the language as it was understood at the time our Constitution was ratified. At the time of ratification, the terms general supervision, superintendent, and superintend were defined as follows. And, Mr. President, this is where we get not a specific recommendation to what we should be doing, but a general recommendation of the direction we should be headed. And it's in these definitions. General, Mr. President, pertaining or applicable to or predictable of all the objects of a given class. Now, the given class in this instance, Mr. President, is general supervision of public schools. So the class is public schools. So the powers and duties of the superintendent is the general supervision of that class and everything pertaining, applicable or predictable to all the objects of that class. Mr. President, it goes on to say universal within the limits of a class or group or things considered. So we can't go outside the class of public schools. This amendment does not go outside the class of public schools, Mr. President. It goes on to say about supervision, the act of supervising, overseeing, oversight, superintendent's direction. They have that ability to direct all of those objects within that class. Superintendent, one who has oversight and charge of something with the power of direction, Mr. President. And superintendent, to have charge and direction as of a school, direct the course and oversee the details of. Details, Mr. President. And in parentheses, some work of the construction of a building. Now, I do not go into school facilities. That is outside this. But in the decision, Mr. President, it says specifically of the construction of a building as what was the meaning of superintend when the Constitution was ratified. Then, Mr. President, sentiments is to supervise, guide, regulate, control, conduct, and administer. So, Mr. President, simply put, that if we're going to look at the unambiguous terms in which this court case was resolved, decided upon, we look to general supervision, and just as the Supreme Court did, we look to the intent and the definition of those terms when the Constitution was ratified. Mr. President, the amendment I bring forward to you simply says, the Management Council co-chairman shall base their study on the initial assumption that the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction should be vested with all the powers and duties held by the office prior to the enactment 2013 Session Laws Chapter 1, together with all the powers and duties assigned to the newly created director of the Department of Education. Because, Mr. President, all those powers and duties are general. They're of the class of education, and the superintendent should have the power to have the direction over those powers and duties.
Mr. Vice President.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, you can pick any parts of this decision out and read them different ways, and it's interesting that a guy in the drilling business is going to debate constitutional law with a guy that makes his living off the land farming. But if you read further and you look on page 22, it goes on to say, in many respects, the state position is consistent with this interpretation, meaning that they agreed with the state's interpretation. And they go on to say that in other aspects, the state's position is at odds. So to take one position one way or the other is not consistent with what the Supreme Court decision says. If you adopt this amendment, you're taking one position clearly that says everything that we did was wrong. That's not what it says. And if you look at page 22, that supports that. I would ask you to defeat the amendment.
Mayor Scott.
Mr. President, rising on and against this amendment for the same reason, Mr. President, I was for the previous amendment. The problem with the previous amendment was the bill as proposed was predisposing a particular outcome to the committee, and I thought it was much more appropriate that the committee be free. I have the same feeling here that I think, as was just illustrated, the interpretation of this court decision takes some careful thought, some careful study, listening to various attorneys for advice, and I hope they would get a wide range of advice, trying to determine what the obligations the Supreme Court has given us. And I think it's a mistake for us on a third reading amendment and hopefully just 10 minutes of debate to predispose the outcome of that, give the committee the flexibility they need to figure out a solution that makes sense and that meets the Supreme Court muster. I urge we defeat the amendment.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President, on and against the amendment. Mr. President, I take you to just right. This basically is the last page of the plurality, which are the three judges that voted in front of this, is the opinion.
that held that it was unconstitutional. And I would just read a couple sentences out of here to clarify why I think my good friend from the eastern part of the state is misguided. That's such a good statement. Anyway, I just love that. I'm sorry I keep stealing your thunder back there, man from KC. Anyway, Mr. President, just reading some things, I think it helps make it clear. The dissent suggests our opinion leads, and this is talking about this place, the plurality is talking about the dissent and talking about why they think the dissent is wrong. The dissent suggests our opinion leads inexorably to the conclusion that any delegation of authority in education arena to any entity other than the superintendent is unconstitutional. In making that assertion, the dissent, like the state, overstates the appellant, and keep in mind the appellant is the state in this one, the appellant's position and our determination. Appellants are not claiming that we are not holding that Article 7, Section 14 entitles superintendent to be in charge or control of all aspects of education. Appellants are not claiming, and we are not holding, that the legislature may not delegate duties and powers to other entities such as the Board of Education and School Facilities Commission. We are simply holding that the legislature may not delegate powers and duties to other entities to such an extent that the power and of general supervision no longer resides in the superintendent. And so when you look at that, they're saying, again, you get back to what they're talking about. They're simply saying that the legislature went too far, not that you can't do it, but that you went too far. And I think it's already been talked about. They go back and they talk in the opinion about a 1919 law where we actually had Mr. President, a Commissioner of Education, who answered to the Board of, answered to the superintendent. But nevertheless, most of the duties and responsibilities that for the direct oversight of education were with the Commissioner of Education, who then reported to and responded to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. So, and they cite that in a couple of examples of saying why that works in an instance. So, again, this amendment it goes too far. It says things that the court did not say, and I would urge you to defeat it.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I'm against the amendment. My understanding of the events is that after the court decision, the Attorney General asked for a rehearing and also asked for further...
Point of order.
What's your point of order?
Point of order, Mr. President, that we can't have debate on a topic of the court which is in the process or a rehearing, and I can cite the Masons here, Mr. Chairman. Section 111. Any manner awaiting adjudication in a court should not be debated or discussed in the legislative body.
Section 111?
1-11.
1-11.
Page 87,
Mr.
Chairman.
Which year are you using of Masons?
2010.
Page 87.
Section 3.
Well, I'm not really sure what Senator Burns was going to discuss because you cut him off. So it's in some respects it's premature for me to even be able to rule on this motion or your point of order at this point in time. Rules committee, that would be fine.
No, Mr. Chairman, permit me to explain, and I think it'll become clear, is that the good senator from Bighorn County was beginning to discuss rehearings. Oh. Big Horn. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Charity County.
Well, I have no idea what you're doing now.
Forget it, Mr. President.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I was simply going to point out that at this point, we don't know what the final determination of the Supreme Court is going to be, and that's as far as I was going to go into the case. And this amendment is predeterminative. If the Supreme Court comes back and either reverses itself or in some way refines what its particular objection is, I'm afraid this amendment is actually going to handcuff both the super committee and the legislature if it should come to a special session. Okay.
Any further discussion on the amendment before the sponsor takes a second time? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think this has been a lively debate, but the misguidance doesn't extend to Goshen County, but it does extend to Natrona and to Fremont County, Mr. President. And let me go in and look at paragraph 38, which was quoted. It definitely, in many respects, the state's position is consistent with interpretation. However, Mr. Chairman, it says, according to the state, general supervision entails supervision at a high level over such issues as apply to all schools in Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, at the end of that paragraph, I think the words, "we disagree," from the majority is really the words that explain the position of the majority. The good senator from Natrona County cited the dissenting opinion in some aspects. And if you cite the dissenting opinion, you're not on the majority, Mr. President. So, you know, I think we're going to have some lively debate. But, folks, really, this is the crux of what I believe the Supreme Court ruled on in these four pages. That's the basis for their ruling, is what they overturned the whole thing on, is that Article 7, Section 14. And if you look at the clear, unambiguous language, that's what the Supreme Court said. And, Mr. President, I think we're going to have some discussion on that, and we have had, but I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 106 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment number 2 has failed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Folks, you know, we're all getting along great. We're all good friends. But we're pushing the limit on with respect to challenging each other. It's one thing to say the representative from Natrona County's opinions are misguided. It's a different thing to say that the representative from Natrona County is misguided. One is a personal attack. One is a challenge of his opinions. And notwithstanding, we're all getting along. It's time. You just have to adhere to those rules, or else we're going to find ourselves getting angrier than we should be in having these debates. You do not challenge the person, and you can't make you jump the leap by saying, well, the gentleman from Cody is misguided. His opinions may be misguided, but not him. And so let's keep it clean. We know the rules. And it might be funny once or twice, but we've hit the limit. Let's back off. And we're going to address the chair. We're going to talk about the opinions on the floor. We're not going to be challenging each other's and their beliefs. You can challenge the beliefs as they come out, but don't challenge the office or don't challenge the individuals.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Third reading amendment number 3, the Senate File 106. Reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 106, third reading amendment number 3, page 5, line 1.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 106, and I hope I'm back on the top of that wave, Mr. President. Okay, Mr. President, this is a real simple amendment. It just boils down to a special session on or about April 21 to determine what we're going to do with this issue. The quickest way to get it is to do a poll before we leave here. I think it's important to get a date specific, Mr. President, and a lot of the reasons why it's important is because we're a citizen legislature. We've got a lot of things that we have to do in our personal lives, and it sure would be nice to know that when we're going to get this thing done, so we don't have to put our whole summer on hold. I know that you guys in leadership want to get this thing done as fast as you can and get as much public input as is appropriate. This gives us a good time to do that, and it does it before the people that are going to be running for this office file and allows them to know what they're actually running for. And so just to get a date certain so we can plan our lives around it, so we know that what we've got going on in the summer we can continue with. We don't have to look at vacation days or things like that or work things that we've got to accomplish, and we can actually plan our life around it. We do it for legislative sessions. We always know when we're coming in. We make adjustments for that. And I would hope that you guys would consider this as a friendly amendment to look and address those issues. So, Mr. President, with that, I think it's self-explanatory. If anybody's got any questions, I'll answer them, but I don't believe there should be any questions specifically. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, there is a question, and I just would need a little bit of help from my legal friends. I understand that we had the problem over discussing a court case, but my understanding is that we haven't even heard back, and we need to hear back from the courts on this. So I'm not sure how we can set a date when we haven't even heard the finality from the courts. And I guess I could use a little discussion about that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I do like the date that's suggested here, although I will tell the leadership I do on that date have an obligation involving an irrigating shovel. And this is right the peak of my busiest season. But in all seriousness, it would be very useful to get this done, get it done promptly before people have to file for the office, so they know what they're getting into and what kind of an office they're running for. I think that might make a fair difference, Mr. President, in the quality of some of the candidates we recruit. Having said that, I hope the leadership will take this suggestion very seriously, but I'm going to vote against the amendment because I think it is unwise to handcuff our leadership on the date of the special session. At this point, there's several contingencies that may come up that will affect that, and I think we ought to trust the leadership. I hope they'll take this as a good suggestion, but if something comes up that makes this impractical, I think it's a mistake for us to put it in statute.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, on against the amendment, I concur with the notion that if at all possible, we should accomplish this exercise before the May 15th filing deadline. People that may be wanting to look at this office, good candidates, may seriously want to know what's embodied in the job description, if you will, before they run. I do want to address the question from our colleague from Natrona County with respect to his concern about the finality of the decision. The decision at the time it was written on the assumption that may be the final guidance we ever receive. What happens from here on now has so many variables that it's impossible to predict what those variables are. and we've talked a little bit about potential differences or potential issues that may arise. Bottom line is, as we sit here today, the court has said we went too far and we need to make an adjustment. Within the decision, there's a variety of posts, if you will, to guide our pathway to arriving at a constitutional bill. And that needs to be done mechanically, just to go in and take a look at our statutes. It may be that we come back and return before there are additional opinions, and it may be that we don't. But there is sufficient guidance in there for us to figure it out. So with respect to that issue, and that is, should we wait till the last paint is dry on the last opinion? That could be months, if not years. We have employees over here that need to know what's happening. We've got a director who has a horse in this race. We have a superintendent with horse in the race. We have folks out there who need some guidance with respect to how this is going to unravel. And I submit to you that's our role. We are a constitutional body with a constitutional obligation. And once we see there's an issue of this magnitude, it's our job to fix it. And we have enough guidance now to fix it. I'd urge that you reject the amendment. Although it's well-intended, there are just too many rolling pieces to make a commitment. Things can happen, including another ruling that might readjust the dates.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer, for your second time.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. And, you know, there's some divisions that we might do in here that if the date's certain, you know, it's on or about April 1. That's plus or minus a week. You know, it's just to get it done. I know there's a lot of legislators at the first week of May, I think five or six of them, that are going on a trip down to Colorado, I believe, to look at that water resource and all the issues that we have there. They're lengthy and very important. I didn't want to put it before that, Mr. President. But if we look at the thing that's really problematic to me, Mr. President, really goes to page 5, lines 2 through 8, which is line 6. And, Mr. President, that says that we have to wait until the district court does something, and then we have 90 days after the district court does something. And, Mr. President, that's gonna put everybody on hold all through summer, pretty much, I would think. So, Mr. President, I guess I'd ask to divide this amendment, and I think it's divisible, and maybe the majority floor leader can look at me to see whether or not we'd have to include lines 3 through 6 or just line 6. And working it in there, I think that...
What?
1 through 7. 1 through 7. And then 8 through 23. Okay, Mr. Chairman, the division would be lines 1 through 7 and 8 through 23. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd go ahead and withdraw 8 through 23. I think there's been enough discussion on that we're probably not going to move on that, Mr. President.
Okay, so lines 8 through 23 have been withdrawn.
And then we're left with, Mr. President, essentially, we still have the opportunity that's left there, subsection C, as it is originally in the bill, and that essentially says that if management council decides it's appropriate to convene a special session to consider legislation, you go ahead and go through the process as we have in our rules, which is pulling the both bodies and see if the majority of them both vote that way. It's not, the majority's not in there, but that's the process. Mr. President, the other, what's left in there, Mr. President, essentially taking out the 90 days and having to wait for the district court to give you a final order, which may never take place. They don't have to, Mr. President, I don't believe. I might stand corrected on that. But this actually gives the management council more flexibility to set those cases, I mean, set that, and you don't have to wait for the district court. So I would hope that that you guys could support that. It at least it gives you the opportunity then, Mr. President, if you wish to take it, you can get it done before people run for the office.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against division number one, which is lines 1 through 7, while the two concepts are divisible, when it was drafted, the concept was division one would have simply said it would be submitted to the legislature, and then we set the division two was setting a time. What I want to remind folks is there is no requirement in lines 1 through 8 to wait for a final decision. Rather, it's a mandate and direction by the legislature to the management council to make sure that we have a solution not later than that 90-day period. And that is to say there's no reason why management council or the super committee cannot move more quickly, which it intends to do, I think. So we can move as fast as is appropriate, but we were saying is not later than 90 days following a decision, the issuance of the mandate, in essence, that action would be taken. So while I understand and I concur with the sponsor's objectives, the existing language accomplishes its objectives so long as the super committee management council move as quickly as they can. We've heard a resounding interest to say, notwithstanding learning more information, we should have this process completed in time for nominations for office, for people to run for this office. So I'd urge you to vote no on Division One, but not because we differ on opinion. Rather, I think the existing language accomplishes what the sponsor intended.
You wish to speak again, Senator Meyer?
Yeah, thank you.
Second time on this division.
Mr. President, I won't. Let's just say that as I read it, Mr. President, on line 3 and 4, it says, on or before 90 days after a final order has been issued by the district court. So, Mr. President, you have to have a final order. And we have no idea when the district court is going to do that. So it precludes us from doing anything until we wait for the court to tell us what to do. And we're big boys and girls, Mr. President. I think we can make up our own mind, you know, what duties should be forthcoming. And then it says, Mr. President, you still have to wait after that for a time for the appeal of the order has expired. And I'm not sure what that time period is. It's probably a couple of weeks. And, or if it is appealed, a final order or mandate from the Wyoming Supreme Court. So you have to wait for the district court. You have to wait for an appeal of the order, or if it's appealed, then you have to wait for a final order or mandate from the Wyoming Supreme Court has been issued confirming the district court's final order. Now, folks, we've got the right to prescribe legislation and fix this problem without the court telling us what to do. And if this language stays in there, we don't have that right. We're abdicating, we're giving that right to the courts and letting us tell, basically telling us what we have to do. If you want to wait for the courts and have them do that, then, you know, I guess I'd say vote against the amendment. It's whether you want the courts to decide this or whether you want this body to decide it.
Question is, shall Division 1 of Third Reading...
Mr. Chairman.
Ayes and nays have been called for. We're voting on lines 1 through 7. The remainder of the amendment has been withdrawn. Third Reading Amendment number 3 to 106. Question is, shall those lines pass?
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Coe?
No. Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Slatern, President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 9 ayes, 21 noes.
Lines 1 through 7 of Amendment number 3 has failed. We have another amendment. Amendment number 4. Reading, clerk will read it in.
Senate File 106, Third Reading Amendment number 4. Delete the first Meyer Third Reading Amendment.
Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, when I prepared this amendment, I didn't have the benefit of the discussion that has just transpired in this body. So I would like to divide this amendment, and I'll just tell you what my intent is and then ask you if you would want to look at that now or after it fits in. The parts that I would want to be Division 1 and have deleted are page 1, lines 1 through 8. The reason I would delete that is that we could have the benefit of that first amendment that did pass. The other part that I would ask to be part of Division 1 and withdraw would be page 2, 5 through 7, because of this discussion of the body of not wanting to have a date inserted. So I would like at some point to ask to have those withdrawn. Mr. President, do you want to look at that now or after the entire amendment is reviewed?
Senator Nutting, I want to be clear. You would like to withdraw lines 1 through 7?
Yes, 1 through 7 on page 1, Mr. President.
Uh-huh. And?
And page 2, lines 5 through 7, because it also has that date of April 21st.
Okay. I know. Yes. First of all, you need to move the amendment, and then we can figure it out.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 4 to Senate File 106, third reading, and ask for favorable consideration.
Now, with regard to the point of order.
President, I don't believe it's divisible as suggested because the Meyer third reading amendment number 1 modifies page 4, line 15, which would require it to be stripped out for the Nutting third reading amendment number 4 to apply correctly. So, Mr. President, I don't believe it's divisible.
Well, I'm not sure that. I think normally, with regards to lines 1 through 7, that's just a technical thing that the staff would deal with. So I don't know that that's necessarily divisible. The least lines 1. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I do think that that has, where we're talking about the first Meyer third reading amendment, which passed, I think this, if we don't take that out, we will undo what we did there, and I think the sponsor wants to avoid that. But it may be that if she's going to want to avoid that, she would also ought to withdraw the lines, page 1, lines 32 through page 2, line 7, which are in that area, and they may be difficult to fit with that, with the Meyer Amendment. But, Mr. President, it's hard to determine that on a quick reading, and I hope that the others in the Senate are looking at that to see if that works or how to proceed on this.
I'm not sure. It's majority floor leader.
The well, my recommendation is that the sponsor move the entire amendment. If it passes, then we'll take a short recess to make sure that we have a bill that needs to send over, we can reconcile that. But I believe that by withdrawing the language that you've done, you're going to inadvertently reduce the impact of your amendment. I think the focus of your amendment is on the line that was addressed by the Meyer First Amendment. So I would worry less about whether the Meyer First Amendment survives or not, more about capturing your amendment. Stick with your amendment. If there is a conflict, we can then take a short recess and make sure we're on the right page.
Senator Schiffer?
Mr. President, with all due respect, this is an important issue. And we'll be voting on something that we're not sure exactly what it says, and this is too important an issue to do that. My suggestion would be to take a short recess, get LSO, come out and track what the sponsor is asking for so we can all see it and know precisely what we're voting on, what's in and what's out. I think we're going to be I'll just leave it at that. I recommend that because of the issues involved in this bill. That way we all know exactly what we did and how we did it, and out of respect for our colleague, it does get a little difficult. I think they can track it in with green print or something. You know, they'll figure out a way to do it so we all know what's going on, would be my recommendation.
Senator Nettie?
Mr. President, hearing these comments that I appreciate greatly, may I request that we go ahead and go through the rest of the amendment and then ask for the decision on dividing the amendment, and then everyone can be more familiar with what's in it. So can I postpone that request for division?
Well, we can lay this, Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, if you lay this back, I think the sponsor ought to take the time to get a corrected copy that does what she wants to. And I think it would be fairly easy for LSO staff attorneys to do that.
Okay, I think that's appropriate. We can take up amendment number 5, and you can get with LSO to make sure that you have a corrected copy that works for you, Senator Nutty. And if we need more time, we'll take a short recess. Okay? Is that okay? We're not laying the bill back today. Okay.
Myers there, why don't you go with Senator Meyer and make sure your two amendments work together. And then we'll come out with a corrected one and or make sure that this is what you want.
Okay. With that in mind, we will take up amendment number 5, the Bebout Amendment. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 106, third reading amendment number 5, to corrected copy, page 4, line 6.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 5 to Senate File 106. Member of the Senate, you can see it says corrected copy. I went back and made a change that I wanted to do before we had a try to divide this amendment. And, Mr. President, what this does, if you look at your bill on page 4, it talks about findings, and it says, based upon the findings specified under subsection A of this section, in response to the ruling. And all I've done, Mr. President, is put some stronger language in there, in my opinion at least, that it says, instead of in response to, say, in as close conformity as reasonably possible with all constitutional limitations identified by the Supreme Court in their decision. I just want to be sure, Mr. President, that we don't forget the importance of the Constitution, the importance of the Supreme Court as we move forward on this bill. And that's the purpose of the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I rise urging adoption of this amendment. I think it puts us in a stronger posture in regard to particularly telling the public that we are going to conform with the Supreme Court decision on this. And, Mr. President, I would ask for the yeas and nays.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, I guess what I'd go back to the sponsors and ask this is that suppose you go and read the constitutional amendment or the case, and it says, and you recall the case does say, that the legislature does have the right to make changes. And so constitutionally, we could move, suppose we went over to point A, and you could read that to go back to point A minus 1. What if we decide to go point A minus 13? Does your amendment require that we go A minus 1, even though we might want to take 13 steps back? If we talk about that, please.
Further discussion, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President, for my second time. No, I don't think it does that. I think what it clearly does is, and we do have that authority, and I don't think we take away that authority, but we're going to, as we move forward and do instead of in response to, we're going to take into consideration that constitutional obligation we have. So it doesn't in any way infringe upon that. And, of course, what would like to all of us would like to see happen, that we hear something before we leave in a week and a half or when we leave. It would be nice to have it. We could deal with it now. Probably won't happen. But if that were the case, then this language even is more important because we would look at that language as to what the Constitution and Supreme Court said and then make decisions based on that. Mr. President, what I don't want to do is, quite frankly, in the next general session, have the same discussion about another Supreme Court decision based on other things we've done and continue this issue. I think let's clearly look at what the Supreme Court said. Let's do what the legislature is authorized to do, but consider what they said and what their opinion means.
Further discussion? Ayes and nays have been called. We have a couple members off the floor. Senator Hastert, if you'd grab them. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft. Dockstader. Driscoll. Emmerich. Esquibel. Esquibel. Geis. Hastert. Hicks. Hines. Johnson. Landon. Meyer. Nicholas. Nutting. Perkins. Peterson. Rothfuss. Schiffer. Scott. Von Flatern. President Ross.
No.
Perkins, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Esquibel, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 20 ayes, 10 noes.
Amendment number 5 has passed. Senator Nutting, how are we coming? Do we need to take Sanity's to the sound of the gavel? Senator, stand at ease until the sound of the gavel. Senator, come back to order. I believe the corrected copy of Amendment Number 4 has been distributed. Reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 106, Third Reading Amendment Number 4, corrected copy. Delete the first Meyer Third Reading Amendment.
Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the corrected copy to Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 106, Third Reading. Mr. President, we did a significant thing a year ago when we passed Senate File 104, and in that intervening year since then, we have had a lot of input from across the state. 104 was very divisive within the state. We've received a lot of input from both proponents as well as opponents of that bill, and we also have had a Supreme Court ruling. I think at this point we need to make every effort to be sure that we make the appearance as well as every effort within our hearts and our actions to show that we are giving respect and consideration for all of those opinions of our citizens as well as of our Supreme Court. So I think that the bill as it stands could be misunderstood to appear that we're giving more representation to some opinions than others, and it could give the appearance that we are spending a lot of state money to have a special session to make decisions that we've already made. It could have the appearance that we're just going through the formality to follow, to meet just the minimum requirements of the Supreme Court, rather than making every effort to follow the spirit of that decision as well. So this amendment, Mr. President, addresses those concerns. So on page 3, line 2 of the bill, it adds the words, I can find my page 3. It adds the words to page 3, line 2. It adds the words "and interest of Wyoming citizens," so that it says that we're meeting constitutional requirements as well as abiding by the interests and concerns of Wyoming citizens. On page 21 of page 3 also, it essentially is doing the same thing by after the word "constitution," adding the words "the interests of the general public." On page 4, line 1, on page 4, line 1, we're adding that this is probably one of the best paragraphs of the bill, and this just makes it better. The paragraph says the legislature is committed to receiving input from educators as well as public testimony, and there it adds the words, and acting in the interests of the public by developing a response to the Supreme Court ruling. So that while we know each other, we know our intentions are to just do that, it puts it into the bill. Page 4, line 7, we delete the management council and insert the words, "a study group composed of 4 members of the management council and 2 legislators who voted against the passage of that 213 Wyoming session law, or Senate File 104. And it also includes 4 members of the management council and 2 legislators who voted against the passage. The other was who voted in favor of it. Actually, against is in there twice. The idea is that we're going to have half of the members voted for 104, half of the members voted in opposition, and four of the members from each side coming from the Management Council, and two legislators on each side of the issue being appointed by the president. And then on page line 4, line 8, we just delete the words "together with." Page 4, line 15, after the period, delete the balance of the line and insert some language that shows that we have not made foregone conclusions, that we're opening this for the committee to come to these decisions and then bring those decisions to us in the special session. So that what we're asking, going to be asking the study group to do, will be to consider, give consideration of current statutory accountability and assessment responsibilities, to consider the proposed budgets for education-related programs and services, for proposing enabling legislation, four proposed functions of the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, five proposed function and selection criteria for the Director of the Department of Education, and six, then, that if the committee decides we need a special session, that they make that recommendation that it be called. So then we delete a lot of that language that shows that these were predetermined decisions, not ones that the committee is open to make. So that is the basis of the amendment, Mr. President, and I stand for questions.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, I'd like to divide the amendment. At least one division would be lines 13 through, I believe, 19.
What, on page 1?
On page 6. On the second page, on the second page of the amendment, line 13 through 19.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, or Mr. President, could I speak to that?
I'm just determining whether or not that is that. How many divisions are you wishing to make, Mr.?
Mr. President, just that one only. Okay, everything else stays the same.
Just look at the bill for just a sec. In essence, she's deleting pages 6, 7, and 8. And that is divisible.
Mr. President, the reason I ask this to be divided and have some discussion with the sponsor, and the reason this is in there, and it was something we did in Management Council, is to allow us to have an opportunity, should we get some information very quickly from the courts as to the direction, that we can in fact have this bill and allow us to move forward and respond to the Supreme Court. And I, as I recall, discussion with staff, this is the language we needed to be able to do that. So if you take this language out and delete pages 6, 7, and 8, then what you're doing, if in the next week and a half, if we had a decision, which is we all know is very, very unlikely, that we don't have anything out there to deal with it. And this language puts a framework in by referring to part of the duties that was involved in Senate File 104 back in, so we have a way to deal with a Supreme Court decision should it happen in a time when we could deal with it in a more timely situation. If we wanted to do that, then if you take this out, there's nothing on the table for us to do that. And so I'm wondering why we want to take this out, and this provides us some relief should we get something before we leave.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, and maybe I totally misunderstand the purpose of this section, but it appears to me that what this section does is repeal the duties that were assigned to the state superintendent in Senate File 104 and then recreates them. And I assume that the purpose was, since this was clearly not part of the 104 that was declared constitutional, was to make it clear that she would retain under any circumstances these particular duties that are enumerated, which are in the existing statute put there by 104, and the Supreme Court was saying we didn't put enough in, but so, which I think implies clearly that what we did put in is proper to put in, and that's all this does. And again, so I would join in asking, why do you want to take that out of the bill?
Further discussion? Senator Nutting?
These are the words from Senate File 104, and Senate File 104 is what's under reinvestigation. My reasons for taking them out is that I wanted this committee to be able to start with a blank slate to say what should the duties of the Superintendent of Education be, and then for them to bring those recommendations to us so that we're looking at them again from the standpoint of the Supreme Court ruling as well as the multiple input that we've had from citizens. I'm not sure why we need to respond to the Supreme Court before we have our special session. If in fact we do have to respond to them that quickly, then I would certainly give consideration to those reasons and would understand why you would want that section left in.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, for my second time, we're creating a statute that was removed. This is a vehicle, and that's what this does, and it's the purpose of this is to allow us more flexibility should we get some definite direction from the Supreme Court. If we don't get any definite direction from the Supreme Court and we go ahead and proceed with what the rest of the bill does, that's fine. All this is a vehicle to allow us, should they come back and give us specific directions, because that is in this bill, and if this bill passes, then we can address that. That's all it does. And other members of the Management Council, if I'm wrong on this because of the legalities, please jump up and tell me. But that's my understanding, and that's why it's in there.
That's correct. Senator Nettie. For your second time on Division One.
Mr. President, so... lines through 13 through 19 are division
one.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's fine.
Okay. You ready for a question on division number one, lines 13 through 19 on page 2 of the amendment? All those in favor say aye. Opposed?
No.
That portion of the amendment has failed. We're back on the balance of the amendment. Any further discussion on the remainder of the amendment? Question has been called. All those in favor of the remainder of Amendment Number 4, corrected copy to Senate File 106, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment has failed. We are now back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Hearing none, the Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2. Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
No.
Hines. Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
nope.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
no.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
Having received the majority of the votes of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 106 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's been adopted. Senator Hicks.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 3, sponsored by the Education Committee, Alternative Schools, an Act relating to school finance. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Coe?
That we placed on alternative schools under the block grant model in 2007. So as I go through this, I'll reference where I am in the bill. What it does, it allows funding under the block grant for an alternative school established after July 1st, 2014, which meets the approval of the director. You'll see that on page 3. The approval is based upon the 2005 cost-based education study, which provides alternative schools as the last resort from a series of resources directed at programs addressing the needs of at-risk students. That's the real key to what alternative schools are all about. Districts must provide formal evaluation of at-risk programs, providing a continuum of learning supports and classroom interventions for struggling students that is undertaken periodically every 2 years and approved by the District Board of Trustees. You'll find that on page 4. I emphasize that alternative school student achievement must be reported annually by the district to the director. That's the bottom of page 4, top of page 5. Educational space for school must be provided within facilities operated and maintained by the district and approved by the school facilities department. So upon evaluation by the director that demonstrates academic progress, the alternative school may be included within the district school's 5-year facilities plan. This is after 2 evaluations. So in accordance with recommendations of the 05 cost-based study, which were to provide alternative schools based upon a small number of students having difficulty learning in traditional school environments, to allow these students to re-enter regular schools, the district is to co-locate the school within a regular school with similar grade configurations. The difference is that the School Facilities Commission may allow a separate facility upon sufficient documentation. You'll find that on page 6, paragraph I. With that, Mr. Chairman, I try to answer questions on House Bill 3.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commend the committee for going after this one. This is one we've been working on for 3 years, bring it back to lift that moratorium. I've had an opportunity to meet with various districts around the state on this. They're waiting for some help. They've got a segment of students that could be greatly be helped by this bill. Commend the committee for doing its work on it.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion and what the committee of the whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill number 3, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill number 3 has passed committee of the whole, and the next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 6.
House Bill number 6, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Domestic Assault and Battery, and Act Relating to Crimes and Offenses. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Chairman, I move when the committee of the whole rise and report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 6, Domestic Assault and Battery. And to explain this very fine bill, I yield to Senator Esquivel.
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Move introduction of House Bill 6 and ask for your favorable recommendation. Fellow senators, House Bill 6, domestic assault, and there should be a handout on your desks that basically explains what this bill is about. On initial inspection, it looks seems to be a little bit complicated, but it's basically making the statutes a little bit easier to follow. And as you all know, domestic violence is probably the one situation that I'm aware of that probably causes the most damage, is the most damaging to a family situation, to a community. And we have several situations that we're all familiar with that are going on today, one in Casper, one here in Cheyenne, and another one to come up shortly. I think right now they're undergoing jury trials and things of that nature. But anyway, I'm not going to take too much of your time just to go over the handout. Wyoming Statute 6-2-501 currently houses the simple assault, aggravated assault, and assault and battery of a household member statutes. The battery of a household member statutes are 6-2-501E and F. And back in the 70s, domestic violence advocates fought very hard to make sure abuse of a spouse wasn't just treated as a family matter. In many cases, it was just, it's up to you guys, it's a family problem, and not too much was done in many cases. But is recognized and treated as other assault and battery for those serious ones. We've learned a lot about domestic violence over 40 years, and while it is assault and battery, it is the only type of assault in 6-2-501 that requires 3 convictions to reach a felony level. It also is a crime that has different dynamics than other types of assault and battery. Law enforcement that is called out to domestic abuse situations also currently have the challenge to make sure that they charge a battery of a household member specifically under 6-2-501E or F. If they don't, it usually ends up just getting charged as assault and battery under 6-2-501, which then leads to a tracking problems for subsequent convictions. So all this bill does is take 6-2-501EF, little I, and 2 little I, and makes it its own statute, which will be 6-2-510 and 6-2-511. None of the penalties or definitions change. You still have to have 3 convictions to reach a felony level. The only difference you will see when comparing the new bill to the old statute is that domestic assault and domestic battery are broken out into their own sections. This change will give law enforcement a specific statute to charge for acts by household members so that these crimes can be tracked and charged as they should be. This bill recognizes that assault and battery of a household member is still a crime, but also recognizes the domestic assault and battery is different with different dynamics. That's basically an explanation of the bill, Mr. Chairman, and then for any questions, if there are any, and otherwise I ask for the question.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a question for our good explainer, our Judiciary Committee. If you go to page 7 of the bill, Mr. Chairman, you've got here they're going back, and this is under this section, which is amending 6-1-104, which is the definition section under our criminal statutes, and they go down, and you see what they're doing is they're amending the definition of a pattern of criminal street gang activity. Means a conviction or adjudication for or solicitation, conspiracy, or attempt to commit two or more of the offenses listed in this paragraph on several occasions in a three-year period. Offenses that include that form a pattern of criminal street gang activity include, and they go down and they're listing all, there's prostitution, there's drugs, there's assault, there's all these things in here, and they get down, and now we're adding domestic assault in violation of this statute, and I'm just trying to figure out in my mind how this fits. Generally, what you're worried about is a street gang. You know, you've seen these videos where somebody comes up and they punch an unsuspecting passerby. That could be it. But I'm having trouble putting that in the context of a street gang, particularly when the element of this new statute that we're creating requires it to be a household member. So I'm trying to reconcile how you have a member of a household being involved in street gang activity if there's a repeated offense against the same household member. While I don't disagree that that should be a felony after so long, I'm trying to understand this connection with street gang activity against household members. If we could get some explanation, that'd be helpful.
Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and that is something that is of great concern. And the reason that's in there, and I'm certainly a long ways from being an expert in gang activity, because our gang disappeared with the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. We've never gotten another one back. But I have studied that gang very closely, so I can say without reservation, we need this in here. And the reason being is I understand it was put in a little bit, I forget what, in the interim process, but that's to go after the intimidation of family members. Either the way it was explained to me, either to get them in a gang or to not hamper a gang. That it turns out some families they need that protection, particularly in terms of the relationship of perhaps a gang member who will intimidate or assault a member of his family for various reasons. So that's why you need this in here. That's why it was originally put in, and I think it's a very valid, or what they tell me, people that know about gangs, and for those of you folks who have gangs in your towns, please stand up and help me out with this, that's why it's in there. Well, now we've identified we're one gang.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. So now I'm really confused, because 62403, which is still another statute, is a statute that's intimidation in furtherance of the interests of a criminal street gang. In that one, a person is guilty of intimidation in furtherance of the interests of a criminal street gang if he threatens or intimidates by word or conduct to cause physical injury to another person or damage to the property of another in order to promote further or assist in the interest of or cause to induce, solicit another person to participate in a criminal street gang. And if you have that intimidation in there, then it's 1 year or a fine of $1,000. So I'm still trying to understand this. Are you saying that it's got to be listed as a criminal street gang activity for it to be included in, to make 403 applicable? Is that what we're saying?
Mr. Chairman, and I think my colleague who obviously stood up and responded, so he's much closer to gangs than I am. But I think that's exactly what we're getting at. And I think it conforms with where we're going with this proposed Senate file, that we are trying to be able to step in and stop or in fact, convict someone because of gang activity that's assaulting a member of their own family. And as I understand, that is actually done, that the allegiance to the gang will actually be stronger than it is to members of their own family.
So now I'm really confused. Does that answer your question more than ever?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, just a matter of observation. Not too long ago, I visited the women's prison in Niobrara. I won't say most, but I'll say many of the women that are there as having been victims of threats and other violence to make them participate as drug carriers or whatever else you can think of, that they are there as a result of committing crimes that they were forced to by other family members. And I think that this is right on target in regard to those cases. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion, that the Committee of the Whole rises and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 6, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Drew, you think the
pen... Senator Driscoll. you may.
Senators, please join me in welcoming my mother-in-law, father-in-law, and niece, Gary and Nancy Shoup, and Carson Harden.
Welcome to the Senate. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 7. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill Number 7, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Unlawful Entry into Occupied Structure and Act Relating to Crime and Offenses. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 7, Unlawful Entry into Occupied Structure, and for an explanation of this very, very fine bill, I yield to Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
As members of the body, this creates a new section for unlawful entry into an occupied structure. And here's the key component for somebody that attempts to commit or commits battery. Right now, as the current situation exists, if somebody breaks into a house and assaults somebody, it's a misdemeanor. What this does is say if you break into a home, an occupied structure, and you attempt to commit or commit battery as defined under the domestic battery statutes or the existing battery statutes, it now becomes a felony, up to 10 years and $10,000 fine. Mr. Chairman, that's what the bill does. So I'd stand for any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Call for the question. Question being called. All those, let me get to the right part of me. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 7, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Okay. Thank you. I'll do that again then. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 7, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. That's right. House Bill 7 is passed committee whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 8. Reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 8, sponsored by the Judiciary, Court Reporter Fee Elimination, an act relating to district courts. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise the report to do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 8, Court Reporter Fee Elimination. And for this wonderful bill, I give the floor to Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, all this does is repeal the provision for the $45 fee that's collected in civil hearings before the district court. All the testimony that we took didn't seem to be that there was impediment anyway to have people. Most of these district court judges provide the option of allowing a court recorder anyway. The testimony that we received in committee that it just didn't seem like that there was any benefit to have this in statute. Mr. Chairman, that's what it does is just repeal the $45 fee. With that, I would stand for any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the committee of the whole rise the report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 8, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. House Bill 8 is passed committee of the whole.
Next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 9. You've heard the, let's read in the bill.
House Bill number 9, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Bodily Injury and Serious Bodily Injury, an act relating to crimes and offenses.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure?
It was assigned to committee number 1 Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the committee of the whole rise to report. Do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 9. Bodily injury and serious bodily injury. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is it goes into the definitions between bodily injury and serious bodily injury and redefines them, but makes it a little more clear exactly what we're talking about. There seems to be some question that it needs to be very clearly defined, primarily because the penalties are different due to the seriousness, and so we want to make it absolutely clear what bodily injury and serious bodily injury actually mean. It starts on the bottom of page 1. We're going to be talking about the definition for bodily injury, and that's at the starting on the top of page 2, a cut, abrasion, burn, or temporary disfigurement. Physical pain, impairment of the function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. Okay, and that's just bodily injury. But when you get over in the middle of page 2, when we start defining serious bodily injury, and that creates a substantial risk of death, causes severe protracted physical pain, causes severe disfigurement or protracted loss or impairment of a bodily function. So you can see we've said, you know, you got to meet a higher bar if you're going to go serious. Causes unconsciousness or a concussion resulting in protracted loss or impairment of the function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty. And finally, E, causes burns of the second or third degree over a significant portion of the body. Or an F, and this is a big one, causes a significant fracture or break of bones. So you can see, Mr. Chairman, we've defined it pretty specifically if you're going from bodily injury to serious bodily injury. And as I said, the reason that's important is because the penalties are different, and so we want to make sure everybody understands where that breaking point is. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
That doesn't apply to my clerk's office.
No.
Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with the favorable recommendation on House Bill 9, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 9 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 34.
House Bill number 34, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. Solid Waste Cease and Transfer Eligibility, and Act Relating to Municipal Solid Waste Facilities Cease and Transfer Grant and Loan Program. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02. Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 34. There are no amendments, and I'll yield to Senator Rothfuss to explain the bill.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, bring House Bill 34, Solid Waste Cease and Transfer Eligibility. Mr. Chairman, one of the things that we recognized in the off-season since implementing the cease and transfer legislation last year was a little bit of a hitch that we had with regard to one of the conditions that had to be met to participate in the cease and transfer program, which is discussed on page 2. The old language in the statute that we passed last year was that the local operator would be required to cease disposal into units and facilities regulated under this article which do not have engineered containment systems or do not conform to performance-based design standards, which was certainly the intent. Mr. Chairman, the difficulty, though, comes into play with how do you actually go about that shutdown for the cease and transfer operation, and what you often do is you take construction and demolition waste and you use that to cap the facility as you're developing your transfer facility. So it doesn't all happen in one nice finite period of time where you stop and then you move on if you want to do it correctly. So, Mr. Chairman, what we needed to do is come in and amend, as you can see here. I think we might have used more words than we needed, but the intent is to allow for that transition period of time where, as you can see in little B on page 2, the other possibility other than the straight-up cease in disposal is to obtain a department approval with a specific period of time that allows for either, as you can see in Roman 1, transfer and disposal of that municipal waste, and then it says towards the bottom of line 3 and 4, for the purpose of closing the facility that is transferring municipal solid waste, and then in Roman numeral 2, it discusses the other opportunity for the purpose of promoting the early closure of the receiving facility or facilities. And there's an indication that it shall not be allowed to enlarge or extend the life of its facility. Mr. Chairman, the intent here is just to realize how this would actually be done in real life, recognizing that we need that construction and demolition waste to provide the cap when you're actually ceasing the activity, and that in the interest of facilitating this process and expediting it, we would want to have some flexibility and give that flexibility to DEQ. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be open for questions, or I'd call for the question.
You've heard it. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 34, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 34 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 46.
House Bill number 46, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, Public Employee Pension Plans Contribution, an act relating to public employees. It was referred to Committee number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
There is a standing committee amendment. Could we have that read in at this time?
House Bill 46, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 13.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation due pass on House Bill 46, Public Employee Pension Plans Contributions. And I would also at this time like to move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 46 as well. And I'll explain that amendment when we get to it in the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, and we've talked a lot about retirement over the past several years, and the concern that we've had about the actuarial soundness of some of our plans. And what we determined in the GAC is we looked at over the summer months that three plans did not meet the criteria for which we were looking at in terms of having a 100% actuarial soundness in 30 years. And so that was a criteria we utilized, and some assumptions we made that put us into the situation as we looked at our investment rate of return. It had been 8%. We moved it down to 7.75%. We had other inflation and payroll growth, and then a mortality factor that we put into there. And if you look at our plans, the three that's in this bill, I'll give you where they were and where the increases we're putting in this bill will take them. Presently, the state plan, the big plan, is at 72.8%. The warden's plan, 73.3%, and Fireman B at 94.9%. And so, Mr. Chairman, what this bill does for those three plans, and I handed out a document that shows you how it affects all three plans, and you can see it there. But essentially, to get the big plan into compliance, we needed 1.5% to take care of that, of which half is paid by the employees, half is paid by the state. To get the wardens in compliance, we need 2.04%, half by the employee, half by the state, and then the fireman B, all by the employee, 0.52%. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk you through the bill and show you where these occur, and then I will talk to the Standing Committee Amendment. If you look at the bill, the first page on the bottom, 93412, is a big plan. You turn the page, that the first part of that on page 2 is the employee, 0.75% share. Mr. Chairman, on the second, on page 3, it's the state employers where the state picks up their share, and it's a phased-in approach over 3 years, just like we did last year. The next portion of that bill on the bottom of 3 treats the full-time brand inspectors the same. You turn the page, and it talks about the employer increase for the big plan that starts in the July 1st of 15. Then, Mr. Chairman, on page 5 is the warden and patrol. That first part of it on the bottom is clean up. The next part of page 6, deals with the 2.04%. The first part of it on the top half of page 6 is the 1.02% for the employer. The bottom is the phased-in portion of it. And then if you look at page 7, Mr. Chairman, that's the fireman B, the 0.52% increase. And, Mr. Chairman, that really is what the bill does. You can see the impacts, the physical notes on the back, and the amount of money it costs, and what the effect is to the general fund, and how we phased it in. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to answer any questions before I speak to the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, what the Standing Committee Amendment does to the wardens and patrols portion of their increase, there is no guarantee that they will pay their employee share. And so we came up with the language on this that said that the wardens, in fact, would pay that 1.02% themselves that we've directed them to do. There was concern that they may not do that. And if there are no questions, I would call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion to adopt the Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 46, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House Bill 46. Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, one other thing I want to be sure that the senators understand, members of the Senate, is that when we did the budget bill, and you remember that we had the rate increase that we said would be a factor of House Bill 46, that money for that increase is, in fact, in that budget bill. And I just want everybody to understand that. With that, I call for the question.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 46, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill number 46 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 3, do pass. House Bill 6, do pass. House Bill 7, do pass. House Bill 8, do pass. House Bill 9, do pass. House Bill 34, do pass. And House Bill 46, do pass amended. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried and the report has been adopted. We have some reports from standing committees.
February the 25th, 2014. Mr. President, your Committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 22, engrossed, Mineral Tax Audit Interest Rate, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flateren. No, Senator Case, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February the 25th, 2014, Mr. President, your Committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 69, Fuel Tax Natural Gas, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Case, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flateren, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February the 25th, 2014, Mr. President, your Committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 54, Lottery Board, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flateren. No, Senator Case, Senator Perkins, Chairman. February the 25th, 2014, Mr. President, your Committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 53, Wyoming Lottery Definition, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Case, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flateren, Peterson, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand adjourned until tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Is there any announcements? Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land and Water Resources, will meet in about 10 minutes and S-15 to take up House Bill 20, Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety Fees.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your Committee number 10, Labor, Health and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room. House Bill 173, Schools, Administration of Veteran. House Bill 86, Rural Health Care Districts Authority. House Bill 95, Diabetes Care Planning.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, February 26th at 9 a.m. in room S-11 to consider the following House bills. House bills in Gross 5, a re-referral. It's education requires school bus video equipment, 2, and House Bill 42 in Gross School Facilities Appropriations. Mr. President, we can't find anybody from the House to meet on the conference committee, so we're not going to meet today. I'd like to have all the members of the Senate Appropriations Committee, as soon as we adjourn, meet in S-11. Thank you.
Senator Coe.
For education, we'll meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock up in S-13. to hear House Bill 104, engrossed, education release of student information.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet tomorrow upon adjournment. That's Wednesday, to consider House Bill 88, engrossed, postdated checks. House Bill 12, the 80-mile-an-hour speed limit. We're going to put the hammer down, Mr. President. And joint resolution, House Joint Resolution 5, Moose Wilson Roadway. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
I'll finish.
All right. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, but a little overtime, 30 minutes after noon recess in room S16 to take up House Bill 63, Railroad Rolling Stock Tax Exemption. House Bill 47, Engrossed, Government Royalty Revenues Definition, and House Bill 145, Streamlined Sales Tax Amendments.
Either Senator, let's go to Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Wednesday, February 26th at 8 a.m. in room S1 to take up House Bill 33, Engrossed, Jury Pool Selection, Archaic Language. House Bill 11, Engrossed, Controlled Substances. House Bill 178, Engrossed, Computer Trespass. And House Bill 175, Engrossed, Transfer on Deathbed.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet 15 minutes after the noon recess tomorrow to take up House Bill 35, Engrossed, Select Committee on the Transfer of Public Lands, House Bill 61, Engrossed, Failure to Extinguish or Contain Fire, House Bill 98, Engrossed, State Investment Services, and House Bill 106, Engrossed, County Firework Bans.
Either Mr. Majority Floor Leader or the Vice President, there should be an announcement regarding rules. Rules Committee, number 12.
That notice, the Rules Committee will meet tomorrow.
At the noon
recess to consider House Bill 36, Constituent Service Allowance, House Bill 37, Engrossed, Revisors Bill, House Bill 62, General Policies, Procedures for Licensing Boards, House Bill 123, Engrossed, Unified Administrative Code and Database. I have a couple other announcements.
Floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, 2 announcements. First of all, you've got the list of agency appointments. Take a look at that. We'll be calling a caucus tomorrow to consider those. We have to have them voted on by Tuesday of next week. So we'll be thinking about it, but take a look at that list. The second notice or discussion point is, for the joint conference committees, during the interim, we adopted a procedure to try to get the notifications of your hearings on the website. So when you, as a chairman of the conference committee, you'll pick up a form from the chief clerk. When you get that form, as soon as you know when you think you're going to be meeting, if you'll fill out the form, return it to the chief clerk, then they'll get it up on the website. So remember that when you're appointed as a chairman of the conference committee, to pick up this form, looks like this, just a box, and all it does is say bill number, meeting date, meeting time, and location. Complete it as soon as you know that your hearing's going to take place. Take it back to the chief clerk, Diana. They will then put it on the website. So if you'll do that, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Anything further? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. The Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Wednesday, February 26th.